most people think. Lockdown, lockdown, lockdown shit. Hello and welcome to episode 101 of What Most People Think. So we've got the century up now. We've got to start building an innings. We want to go for a daddy 100 here. Just a quick explanation. I know the music still says lockdown in it. Lockdown, lockdown edition. I still like that tune, but I'm working on a replacement for it. So maybe you could help us out with what word, what two-syllable word should go in place of lockdown? Because it sort of helps with the tune, because I realised when you took the lockdown bit, it doesn't sound as good. So what most people think UK at gmail.com, email in, and what two words can sort of sum up our new reality as we have most of our freedoms restored until obviously vaccine passports come in and, you know, we have winter lockdowns and they take them all away again. Thank you for all the feedback for episode 100 with Al Murray in. It was just great to have a chat with a comic who sees the comedy industry and the actual act of producing comedy so clearly and as, you know, a good antennae for what people, you know, really want, or, you know, to sort of get the USP of the podcast out. What most people think, that's what this podcast is about. Trying always to get to the heart of what is a reasonable assessment of the centre ground of British political view, which actually often is centre right, you know, but not that you'd think that from social media. So this episode is going up a little bit early, and that's because I'm going away. It's Tuesday today. This will probably go up either Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. And we're going away to the South Coast. We're going to the South Coast. And I've got a little itinerary together because I'm 44. And that is my job as a man and as a father, is to this fun that's going to happen isn't going to happen without strict scheduling and hitting our marks, okay, family? And I was explaining it all to my wife of just how exactly what we're going to do on each bit of each day. And I saw the light drain out of her eyes a little bit as she sort of realised that I've become, you know, I've gone full Clark Griswold. You know, the guy from National Lampoon's Vacation. That's a very much mid-40s thing to do, isn't it? You go, right, okay, someone's got to seize this by the scruff of the neck. So from hour 11 till midday, I've checked the forecast, and we'll be by the pool then. But there's a 14% chance of precipitation there, so we will then be going to the aquarium, because aquariums are... Have you ever noticed that when you go away, aquariums are just like... When have you ever gone, oh, fucking, what a great aquarium that was? And if you know of one, there'll probably be somebody right now going, well, actually, there was one in New York that I went to. I mean, your general British seaside aquarium. It's just one of those standard fucking things that you do. You go there, you don't give a shit about all the other stuff. You go, right, show me some penguins, show me some fucking stingrays, and let's get out of here. Just pick up on a couple of smaller subjects here. The Olympics, right? So the Olympics are going on. Team GB, we're doing all right. We're doing all right in the medal table. But there's been some talk about one of the co-hosts of the BBC's main evening coverage, Alex Scott. And she's had coverage for various reasons or for other things in the past. But this guy, Lord Digby Jones, he criticised her pronunciation. He said that she wasn't pronouncing her G's at the end of words that end in ing, right? Like rowing, swimming. And she says rowing, swimming, right? This does happen. People get criticised for pronunciation. Still on Radio 4, you'd think the most controversial thing that I do is have political views that are right of centre. But no, a lot of people just, you know, they don't like the way that I drop my H's and my T's and stuff like that. So the natural reaction to this, because this guy's called Lord Digby Jones, he couldn't sound more upper class and Tory or white. That, you know, if you tried, and then people will rally. So then Alex Scott did this post saying, I am proud. I'm proud of where I come from. You know, she sort of defends herself and the way that she talks. Fair enough. You know, I'm broadly on side with that. But then what happens is it's another one of these, you know, and then people leap to her defense, obviously, the usual Twitterati mob that seem to think that by slamming other people, that somehow makes them a good person, including Stephen Fry and people like that. And I thought, right, well, what Lord Digby Jones has done there is he's allowed an easy way out of the question, which is Alex Scott really up to the job of anchoring the Olympics, you know? I'm not sure, you know. She seems to lack a little bit of gravitas. She's, you know, she's happy to be there, evidently. But, you know, I sort of look at Denise Lewis opposite her and think, well, you know, there's an actual Olympian there. Denise Lewis seems to talk with a bit more kind of clarity and knowledge in terms of what she's talking about. It does seem a little bit sometimes like sort of Claire Balding met someone on a do and said, oh, do you fancy coming and and hosting some Olympics coverage. And I've no doubt that, you know, if Alex Scott stays in the job longer, she will get better at it and stuff like that. But it's what these debates prove. You always get some extremely, you know, snooty right-wing person that overdoes it and goes in and is genuinely, like, quite unpleasant about someone. And then you get the overreaction from the liberal side. And the question that gets lost in the middle is just a simple one. Is, you know, is this person really the best available presenter that we've got for the Olympics? Just a quick thing about Labour as well. And I've realised I'm doing stories here in the first bit, which I don't normally do. But there's a couple of smaller things that I wanted to get stuck into. Is there was a bit of talk recently that Labour have narrowed their lead in the polls. And obviously, you know, that's better for them than where they were at. But I was sort of thinking, you know, this is the midterm. We're getting up for the midterm of this parliament, right? Where the Tories have an 80-seat majority. And the best that they've done is they've managed to narrow the lead in the polls. We're only behind by 5 points. Paradise awaits. I don't think it's good enough. I think Starmer, I mean, like, in terms of what they provided as opposition, a lot of what they've said in relationship to COVID has been like, well, let's do it sooner, let's do it faster, let's do it quicker, let's do it better. Why do you listen to them but not us? Which just sounds less like opposition and more like nagging. It does sound like nagging, doesn't it? Well, do it quicker, do it faster. Why don't you put the bins out? And it's 2 weeks since we've unlocked, and, you know, all these 100,000 cases that we were predicted to have just haven't happened. You think, again, when you look at, like, the when you look at the scale of expertise that's sort of rallied behind one opinion, when do they ever get... I mean, if I was as wrong about the numbers as some of these experts have been about the COVID numbers, I'd be... I don't know what the equivalent would be in terms of doing a gig. It would just be to walk on with a fucking bucket on my head, face the wrong way, and just make whale noises. And you know, the Edinburgh Fringe, that would be good enough for a nomination. But what do Labour do? You know, do they just get rid of Starmer? If you're a Starmer guy or a Stormtrooper, he's not the guy. And this is like a football club, isn't it? Do you actually realise mid-season, it's not really happening, is it? We're still flirting with, you know, we've won a couple of games recently, but it's been a real lean patch. Or do you wait until it's too late and do like what Newcastle would do if they were in the bottom three? They'd wait until 5 games left. And, you know, like, you know, when they brought back Keegan, that Labour will bring back Blair or do something where it might have been the right guy at a different time, but it would just be too late. So I think the Labour Party, they need a different person in charge. I think that's really fucking obvious. You know, if you can't score, you know, if you can't make inroads on the Tories after the exam sort of catastrophe, PPE, you know, pile them high, you know, that comment Boris made that most of the country didn't really take that seriously, but was a big deal on social media. You know, the very existence of Matt Hancock, if you can't have cut the lead by then I don't think it's going to happen. So, sorry, a bit late in the show, we're going to do the cuss count for last week, which was 0.28 swears a minute. So my curve has definitely gone down, even... you'd think with somebody like Al, you know, I wouldn't necessarily manage my language as much with the pub Blair Nord. But yeah, it was relatively low. Al came in with 10 swears, which puts him in a very healthy place on the leaderboard. That puts him on at 5. Still no one really coming close to Ramesh Ranganathan averaging 26 swears per episode. And that's on 3 episodes. It's very hard to see how this is going to get caught. Maybe, as Ramesh will always be the Christmas show guest now, if no one's caught him by then, it might be time to do a trophy and start again. We've got new patrons. I mentioned the VIP patron in this section and then the other guys later on in the show. It's Mike Thorogood. Mike Thorogood. That's a cool name. Mike Thorogood sounds like he'd have a really bassy voice there. Hi, you're through to Mike Thorogood. Mike Thorogood, are you like a late night Australian radio DJ? Hi, Mike Thorogood in the evening. Hey, who wants to listen to some Barry White? Hey, Mike Thorogood. Thoroughly good? It's Thoroughly Good with Mike Thorogood on Sydney 922.8 FM. Mike Thorogood. Thoroughbred. I mean, there's so much positivity in your surname and you're a VIP patron. What a fucking guy. We'll do a thank you and a fuck you. A thank you to the people that came out to the tour show in Bath. So the thing is, the tour isn't really starting until the second week in September. But the people of Bath, you know, they're having their festival and they're like, oh, we need you here this week. So I had to kind of really work my ass off to get the tour. As you imagine, I'm still doing like new material things and building it up. So I cobbled it together. God, no, I got it in a decent nick, but it was hard to fucking remember all of it. And I did a show in Bath, and the audience were very cool. The audience, I couldn't work them out at times, and then I realised, like, oh, they look liberal, but they're actually way more conservative than me. And once I worked that out, we had a lot of fun. But on the way to the stage, as I was walking to the stage, I knocked over someone's drink, and then I saw this red on my trainers. And on the way home, my feet stank of Merlot. And I didn't know, you know, like how trench foot was a condition in the First World War. I thought maybe Merlot foot is like a sort of an ailment people get in Bath because it's so fucking middle class there. They've got their own clean air zone. You seen those are coming in? Bath, obviously one of the first to have it. You just think, I haven't checked. I'm sure Brighton's got one. Bristol, you know, these left-wing enclaves. We've got a clean air zone. It's, you know, just doing our bit. It's not really going to fucking change anything globally, but we feel good. A fuck you. So the fuck you is Konstantin Kistin, friend of the show, did a long Twitter thread. Now, I know not everyone's on Twitter, but I would advise you to go and have a read of this, because what he sort of does is he unpicks how a normal person could become quite heavily anti-vax, the kind of things that could radicalise them. And he kind of goes all the way through the, you know, the electoral certainty that Brexit wouldn't happen and Trump wouldn't get in, you know, the way that Russian interference was quoted in both and then not really proved to have been a thing. The Cambridge Analytica thing went down the same route. He also talks about how some of the stuff that Trump said about a year ago is now, but, you know, quite mainstream thinking. So he kind of tries to illustrate how an average person might have lost faith in mainstream media. It's a really good thread. And then, because it's done really well, it's got thousands and thousands of retweets, there's a lot of people that are threatened by this, because it sort of unpicks, it sort of holds the liberal establishment kind of accountable for a lot of what's happened. And so people have started trying to, you know, go for him online. And because one of the things that he mentions is there was an American actor, a black guy called Jussie Smollett, who was basically staged his own racist kidnapping, which fucking sounds so mental. When you think about it, he staged his own racist kidnapping, and it seems, you know, depending on which source, I mean, definitely staged it, but it seems that it's because he thought he was going to get written out of a show, and he was sort of thinking, what's a good PR stunt? Remember when PR stunts used to be actors, you know, soap opera actors opening a local supermarket? I'd say staging your own fucking racist kidnapping was a bit of a stretch. But then he sort of, so Konstantin points out how that was initially reported and given loads and loads of coverage. And then when it's proved that it was staged, that it wasn't given much coverage. But this is what people do online, is that they try to boil things down to just one thing that someone said. So a few people have taken this one, you know, it's 50 posts in this thread that Konstantin's done. As I say, well worth a read. But they're pulling out this one thing that he said about Jussie Smollett, and they're saying, so let me get this straight. Because Jussie Smollett, I don't have to believe in vaccines. And it's like, it's not what he's fucking saying at all. And it just shows, like, you know, when someone's backed into a corner and they're threatened, they're just looking. This is, I mean, you know, call me a coward. I talk about stuff on the podcast more and more now, because social media, and maybe I'm a coward for doing it, but they're these pricks, they're just looking for that slight inconsistency in what you say, because social media, the decks are loaded in their favour. It is left-leaning and liberal overwhelmingly, because what these people are looking for is a way of establishing on a daily basis that they're a good person. So they need villains, right? They absolutely need the villains. Who is it? Oh, Neil Oliver said something about catching COVID. You know, I'm against Neil Oliver, so that means I'm a good person. Oh, Jeremy Clarkson said something about, you know, the reality that people will die. Oh, I'm against Jeremy Clarkson. I'm a good person. And it made me think of a little moral tale that I thought of, and this might be a weird way to close the first section. But here it is, right? Just imagine this. This is, I'm trying to illustrate my view of these people in a strange little moral tale. A Twitter activist arrives at the pearly gates, and St. Peter says to him, or her, or they, or fucking whatever. I wonder if St. Peter now actually does that, you know? I mean, do you think if there is a conventional afterlife that they're up with the latest woke trends? Even they're looking down the list going, oh, Jesus Christ. I don't know what to call them these days, God. They're coming up identifying as all sorts. Jesus Christ. Oh. So a Twitter activist comes to the pearly gates, and St. Peter says, so have you been a good person? And the Twitter activist gets out their phone and shows screenshot after screenshot of all the times that they've insulted right-wing politicians and quote-tweeted right-wing journalists telling you how much they disagree. And St. Peter nods and says, fair enough,
But what did you actually do?
I'll just leave that there. Is that profound or was that shit? I'm thinking now I've finished it. Shit. I mean, it needed a punchline, didn't it? Oh, here's a punchline. Consequently, St. Peter's Twitter account gets permanently suspended. There you go, punchline. Okay, so this week is one for the purists. We're just doing a couple of subjects. It is just us for this week, and then we'll be back with a guest next week. First up, we'll be looking at the decision by the American Medical Agency to suggest that we should take biological sex off birth certificates. Okay, so for this subject, we're going to go back a bit. You know Andrew Doyle, friend of the show, was on the third episode, actually. And he is the creator of Titania McGrath, if you haven't seen Titania, she's an online character who's a piss take of like the super woke, essentially. And a long time ago, Andrew did a tweet via Titania, which was basically saying that, that they thought that putting biological sex on a birth certificate was essentially inhibiting people. And, you know, we need to remove this kind of toxic levels of labelling. Well, fast forward to 2021, and we had the American Medical Agency. Is that what they're called? They're called the AMA. Look, I think, you know, for this podcast, that's enough level of facts. That's already more sort of accuracy than I normally go for. But I have got the quotes here. And the idea is that requiring it being biological sex being indicated, can lead to discrimination, an unnecessary burden on individuals whose current gender identity does not align with their designation at birth, namely when they register for school or sports, adopt, get married, or request personal records. Now, I'll just give you a second here, because I can imagine a lot of you going, oh, for fuck's sake. I mean, whatever next? Whatever next? I don't know if there is anything after this. I don't know how much more excessively woke you can be. And let's just say that woke as a word, I think it gets overused. But I think that this is an example of exactly of a very woke way of thinking. I'll read on. A person's sex designation at birth would still be submitted to the US Standard Certificate of Live Birth for medical, public health and statistical use only. All right, so they're sort of saying, look, you know, we're still going to have a sort of secret record of who's actually biologically male or female. Oh, right, that's, I mean, the thing is they call it sex designation. I would argue a designation is a thing that is a decision by somebody, not something that is evidenced by the existence of a cock and balls or, you know, the knowledge that or a vagina or the knowledge that someone has ovaries. This is mental. This is fucking mental. And I just read on where they are in the States already. It's that 10 states offer a gender-neutral designation on birth certificates, but not on passports. Because, yeah, surprise, surprise, all right, is that you can play around with this stuff, but the moment that you know that you're traveling to other countries, you're like, yeah, I'm not sure that in the Middle East they're going to be playing around with that shit where you just put like a fucking X on your passport. You know, there's a lot of countries where they go, imagine you get to passport control in fucking Saudi Arabia and you're like, I don't actually sort of like identify as one sex or the other. Like, okay, just go and sit in one of those waiting rooms over there. Somebody will be along to talk to you very quickly. And so there are dissenting voices to this. Robert Jackson, MD, I think he's related to Doogie Howser. Little 90s joke for you there. An alternate delegate from the American Academy of Cosmetic Surgery. I mean, look, this is, this isn't the greatest guy necessarily to be speaking for the beliefs that I hold true, is that he's from cosmetic surgery, which kind of, you know, quite heavily depends on people having significant needs of gender and appearance. But anyway, he's got an MD, right? MD. This guy knows what he's fucking talking about. He said, we as physicians need to report things accurately. Quite a radical idea there, that doctors should actually say the truth. All through medical school, residency and speciality training, we were supposed to delegate all of the physical findings of the patient we're taking care of. I think when the child is born, they do have physical characteristics, either male or female. This is just fucking mental that he's having to say this and just win people around to this argument. And I think that that probably should be on public record, but that's just my personal opinion. That's exactly what he says. I mean, it just goes to show that an actual doctor saying the fucking truth has to kind of qualify it as though, look, that's just one of my hot takes. Everyone in the AMA says it. They call me Crazy Bob Jackson. So, you know, just just take me with a pinch of salt that male and female is definitely a fucking thing. But the riposte to that, this is from Sarah May Smith, MD. She's another member of the... I've done that joke. She's the delegate from California. Speaking on behalf of the Women Physicians section, said removing the sex designation is important for moving towards gender equity. Okay. She said, we need to recognise gender... I'm going to read this with an upward inflection because I imagine this is how it was said. We need to recognise gender is not a binary but a spectrum, obligating our patients to jump through numerous administrative hoops to identify as who they are based on sex assigned at birth, primarily on genitalia, is not only unnecessary... Unnecessary? Oh, fair enough. But actively deleterious to their health. It's only deleterious to the health for the relatively small number of people who suffer from gender dysphoria, right? Now, that is a real thing. There needs to be an attention to that, whether it's through counselling, fully transitioning, you know, self-IDing. But don't act like, for the majority of people, knowing that you're male or female is some kind of fucking cross that you have to bear. What most people think. And the argument that she also puts forward, that race was once public on birth certificates, and now it isn't. Okay. I mean, that's a great play, isn't it, when you're from the woke side of things. Race, something race, comparison with race, I don't know. Fucking, I've said race, I see all the middle-aged white guys getting uncomfortable. I'm going to keep saying it, race. And then the other argument is that sex no longer has a role to play in the jobs people do. I think that's the theory. I certainly understand the theory that sex should not be a barrier to a job. But let's just say that... it's been a while where women could be mechanics and the take-up isn't great, is it? That's one of the things that makes me laugh about you. You know, I mentioned this before, but you know, teaching my son, you know, he's grown up in a very progressive world, so I sort of have to split the line between what I think and the world he's growing up in. So as I always say to him, son, there's no reason why a woman shouldn't be a mechanic. It's just most of them don't want to do it. I can't not tell him the truth and make out like there's this world where there's loads of female mechanics and firefighters and... You know, this is one of those ideas, taking the sex off a birth certificate. It should have got that shut down at boardroom level. You know, it should have got shut down. You know, it's like long meeting and one of the younger, newer, woke members who's already probably escalated three complaints about other members of staff starts wanging on again. She's sitting there going, I just think like gender is a construct and we know that now and that should be formally recognized by not being on the birth certificate. And then, you know, the guy holding the meeting, old Chuck, right? He's 55, he's worried, he's like Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon, just desperately trying to get to retirement. And he's like, well, that sounds like something my teenage daughter would think. Yeah, no, fuck it. I don't care. I just gotta stick this shit out for 5 more years. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, biological sex. Yeah, let's take over the birth certificates. That sounds like a wonderful idea, Janine. And what if, you know, I know that there's this divide between biological sex, which some people still dispute, but is a reality to almost fucking everybody, right? And then there's gender, which we can see that there's an element of construct in it. But what if gender is a consequence of sex, right? What if gender is... we spent the much bigger part of our recent history as mammals, you know, in a more primitive setting whereby our bodies contributed to how we acted. So women... You know, this is where I'm not going to sound like an anthropologist here, but women, yeah, they got tits, they can feed the babies, they got wombs, they can make the babies. You know, they're not as strong, but you know, maybe they stay here in the place and do the gathering of berries and the rearing of the kids. The men, they're a bit stronger, a bit quicker, not so great with the kids. Maybe that's where childcare stereotypes come from. It's not that we've just allowed it to be this way, but that very early on we could see, if I leave him alone with the baby, it's going to cry. He's going to throw it out of the fucking cave, you know, or he's going to use it as bait for a wolf in some moment of insanity. So we kind of did that, and then the women were more communicative. And we notice to this day that in pretty much all cultures, in especially in the early years, girls, you know, their verbal abilities, verbal reasoning is way ahead of boys. They use more words. What is it? Women use 20,000 words in a day and men use 7,000 words. So, like, this exists. This exists. And so the mistake maybe is to think all of it just was something that we just fucking made up. You know, society just came up with this just to keep women down. Maybe it's there. Maybe it's a consequence of sex. But the truth is, you know, women, most women want to have long hair. Even the most feminist women that you know, they want to have long hair. Why is that? Why do they want to let you know with every verbal cue possible that they are female? Maybe they like being female. Like maybe they know that womanhood is a state into which, you know, that they feel like they fit in it. I mean, I didn't understand the long hair thing when I was a kid. I actually thought women just like grew hair at a quicker rate. You know, in my mind, it was like women have long hair, but then I thought it's some sort of genetic reality rather than the fact that they just don't cut it as often. And the communication thing is massive. We all know this to be true. We all know this. Do a bit of Michael McIntyre. We all know this to be true, right? When you're at home. But when you go and visit, like family and friends, the point at which men would leave versus the point at which women would leave is very fucking different, isn't it? You know, I think an hour and a half, most blokes would feel like that was enough for most social meetings. And I'm not saying that that's right. There is a richness that comes from those extended gatherings and stuff. But most blokes, an hour and a half, they'd be like, right, we'll get on the road. You know, the M25 is not good at this time. It's let's get cracking. But women, even once women have identified the right time to leave, okay, like, this has run its course, they still have a lot of difficulty in pulling the trigger. You ever noticed that? Where they just sit there and they go, anyway, best get going. Yeah, best get going. Oh, and then you're standing up. They've indicated that the social gathering is at an end and you've stood up to go and get the coats. Now you're in fucking no man's land. Sometimes the bit after that is like almost as long as the first bit. They just keep going. And you think, is this because you really got more information to share or just because you're worried that if you suddenly seem to leave abruptly, it will sour the experience and then you'll just be perceived to be a bitch? What is... Answers to what most people think, uk@gmail.com. Please tell me, ladies, are you just as desperate to finish these fucking social gatherings as the men, but maybe you're just nicer? So there's this issue on the left whereby there's a desire to be supportive to the trans community. So the left wing have already lost the working class. But now what you also have is, I increasingly see, is there's left-wing women that are kind of surprised and disappointed by just how quickly the left has been, how easily that they've abandoned the idea of the sort of the protected identity nature of being a woman. I see it increasingly in interactions. Women are like, fuck, just because of your desire to kind of be part of the kind of patchwork of opinions that creates being securely woke, you've just abdicated your responsibility to an identity that's needed protecting time and time and again throughout history. So I think that things like this are, I think what most people think is just, like, you'd struggle to explain this to most people in your family, right? Like, an actual medical agency has suggested that we remove sex identification from birth certificates. This is why it's another problem with the left, is people sort of go, what is the left? Am I on this side? And they think, well, the right do some stupid things. They're mean sometimes. I think that they could be a bit more generous. And then they look at the left and go, however, these fuckers are crazy. A quick hype here for the tour, which starts on the 8th of September in Nottingham. I think there's still tickets available for that. We're going to Barnstable, we're going to Leeds, we're going to Milton Keynes, we're going to Southport. Who fancies it? Southport, bit of a Southport weekender. Yeah, let's get the fucking Eddies in. We're going to, I think the Leicester Square Theatre shows are all sold out, but there is a waiting list that you can get on for that. Manchester's sold out, but you could go Leeds, that's close, isn't it? Hey, fucking Northern Monkeys. And you could go, you know, we're in Birmingham at the old Rep Theatre. That one's still got tickets left. We're going, Shrewsbury's sold out. Look, we're going everywhere. If you want to come and see me live, I've now done a full version of the show. And it's more provocative than I expected it to be. I think I'm chilling out on social media, but maybe I'm getting a little bit angrier on stage. So if you fancy seeing a 44-year-old man struggling to understand the modern world, it's I Blame the Parents. Go on Live Nation and get your tickets booked. Okay, let's have a quick chat about mental health stuff this week. So let's look, there's been a lot in the news because various high-profile athletes, which is more of a Yank phrase, you know how the Americans use that for anybody who's like, they would call Ben Stokes an athlete. You know, which fair enough, he's in good nick, but if you think how the American designation would apply to cricketers from the 80s, do you know what I mean? Mike Gatton, would he have been an athlete? Anyway, several the US gymnasts, right? The Chinese tennis player, Ben Stokes, they've all backed out of various things using mental health as the reason, right? And it tends to get a similar reaction in the liberal left world, which is what makes it a good what most people think subject, right? It gets an off the peg reaction, which is we stand shoulder to shoulder, side by side, hand in hand, trans men are men, save the planet, go Greta, thoughts and prayers, gender's construct, you know, just all the usual opinions. And it doesn't tend to get much interrogation, right? And then on the other side of that, you get somebody like Piers Morgan, who questions it, right? Who questions whether or not these athletes are just giving in to pressure and whether or not they need to be stronger. And I would say that without sort of giving the game away this section, I think that Piers Morgan's attitude would be closer to society as a whole. I don't think that means that Piers Morgan's definitely right, but I just think it's another one of these huge disconnects between the general public and the kind of, you know, the liberal left, particularly as an online movement. And now our friend Alex Scott, who we mentioned earlier in the show, and I don't want to seem like I'm digging her out because I have no issue whatsoever with her. She seems like a very nice person, but she did a kind of monologue when that, well, I can't remember that athlete's name, you know, the girl, the US gymnast, right? When she pulled out and she did a little monologue, which I think was an attempt to go viral, which was the usual stand shoulder to shoulder. We've got to talk more about mental health. You know, that's the standard refrain, is it's still very taboo. It's so taboo. You're talking about on a fucking primetime sports show, okay? You're not talking about it. You're mentioning the words mental health. You want to talk about it. Let's get a specific chat going and talking about how anxiety feels, you know, what kind of things bring on depression, not just say solidarity with mental health sufferers. But anyway, so she did that kind of monologue. And so again, you get one of these divides. And, you know, I understand the pressures of mental health, and there are caveats here that sort of maybe would suggest that this year's Olympics might be more pressurized than previous ones. One, I suppose on one hand, you don't have the number of people in the stadium, which definitely makes it less pressurized. I mean, I can only say that having appeared on some panel shows recently, and you definitely, when you're going to the gig, the fact that you know there won't be a full studio audience, definitely, you know what I mean? You sort of think, well, as long as us comedians, we all laugh at each other's jokes, we might be all right. But on the other hand, there are more mental health problems that have been bottled up as a consequence of the pandemic, right? So maybe people are carrying those in. We'd have all seen since we've had traffic lately on the road. Traffic is back, and so are angry middle-aged men driving close behind people, flashing them, get out of the way, get out. Road rage is back, isn't it? Have you seen that? Road rage is back. Those guys, if you're listening to this and you're one of those guys where you think, I drive a powerful car, people should make way. Same, you're probably the same guy that when you go to the swimming pool, you do front crawl and you literally just fucking elbow people out of the way as you go. Fair enough, you're an alpha, brilliant. What I want to know is when you're driving like that and you're tailgating someone and you can see that there's 20 cars in front of them, right? Is that what you just think, that everyone should just make way, that there should be some sort of Moses parting of the M6 for you, so everyone should just get out of your fucking way because you've got a powerful car? So we know that these things are back. We've got these new pressures, dormant mental health issues, right, that may have resurfaced. But there is a difference between mental health, right, mental health issues and pressure, you know. They're not the same thing. Now, there'll be things that seem like a mental health problem that are come as a consequence of pressure. And look, maybe one of the issues that older generations, where we react badly to this, is because it shines a light on us, don't we? I sort of think, oh, you should just carry on, just keep going. But then I think, well, maybe that's because that's what I did, and I don't really want to interrogate whether or not those are the right decisions. I mean, for example, in the build-up to me doing live at the Apollo, I was in a right old state. I'd done a run at the Edinburgh Fringe, and it just took a lot out of me. And then it was like 5 days after the Edinburgh Fringe finished, I had to do live at the Apollo. Normally, if you'd done the Edinburgh Fringe for that long, you'd be sitting in a darkened room just sucking your thumb, you know what I mean, just crying over the bad reviews and in the fetal position. But I sort of had to try and get myself off the floor, and I did a warm-up gig for it, and I had like a panic attack on stage, but I just got through it, you know what I mean? And Live at the Apollo was coming up, and it was, yeah, I just had all the worst fears that you can imagine of how it'd go generally. And I think I mentioned this in the episode with Sean Walsh, was that I thought that I'd either fall over or piss myself. So I sort of had the anxiety that you should have, that I should have when I'm drinking, because it's actually quite possible there that I'll do both. Just fall over and piss myself. That would have made for an interesting Live at the Apollo experience. Again, the critics would probably have liked that more. But all right, so I was going into that. It was tense. What should I have pulled out? Because what that would have done to my career Now, people might make the right noises publicly, but in this day and age, you know, you say, oh, I'm pulling out because of mental health. They go, yeah, no, we completely understand. You've got to do what's right for you. Hashtag mental note. Don't book this fucker for anything ever again. Now, shoot me for just telling the truth. That is how employers would think. Or not necessarily, and not necessarily being evil, but something like Live with the Apollo is a big production. And you need to kind of know that the people that you book are going to be able to more or less fucking do the show, right? But if, forget external agencies. What would have happened to me if I'd have not done that gig? Then I would have given in to a fear. It was an irrational fear, of course. You know, the overwhelming likelihood was that I would get through it. You know, in terms of what it took out of me, that's another issue. But then the next time that I needed to do something big, my most recent memory was of not doing it. You know, and then the fear breeds. Then you start to become, you know, fear. You're scared of fear, right? And there were times maybe like when I've been doing comedy where I could have been smarter and just pulled out, because I've definitely got a thing of just keep going. You know, like the night in Monty Python. It's definitely a thing in my family. Well, in my dad's case, he actually did lose an arm. But is just carry on. And there were certain times with my job where I probably could have just took myself out of the firing line. You know, if I'd have been a cricketer, they might have done that. You know, you hit a few ducks in a row and they go, yeah, you know, Jeff is he's still looking great in the nets, but maybe that's where he should fucking stay. And maybe there were times where I was doing the old duck and shit bag in Oldham or something that maybe I didn't need to be on stage that night. But, you know, you can get the fear. And I'm not equating me gigging to 200 pissed up stags and hens with the, you know, the pressures of gigging on the Olympic stage. You know, I'm not sure that me doing knob jokes or observations about Keir Starmer's voice is necessarily up there with competing in the final of the javelin. But I'm just saying, you know, cricketers, I understand in a way. Cricketers, I understand depression more for them because that job is a petri dish for depression, isn't it? You know, you're out there loads of hours every day. You're just getting up. If you're fielding, you're going like, I've just got to be out here, especially if you're getting tonked. I've got to be out here for like, well, how many hours today? That's 5-6 hours? Jesus. You know, hotel rooms in other countries playing in the Big Bash, and the only Big Bash you're really doing is you're wanking yourself into another dimension because it's gone to the point where we find another one of these binary arguments where you either sort of agree with Piers Morgan or you stand by hashtag solidarity with anybody that quotes mental health issues. No one can know what goes on in someone's mind, right? So there is always a tipping point for people. But you do definitely need to try and stick at things, I think, you know, because it's the thing of anxiety, right? So this is the thing. Don't talk about mental health. Say something specific. The thing about anxiety is often the fear of something that's not going to happen. And sometimes doing the thing and it not happening is the proof that you need, right? It's the exhilaration that you get on the other side. Now, sometimes I've been in a place where it's so bad that even once you have that proof, you then fear the next thing. And if it goes on for long enough, maybe you do need to step away. But there is a big distinction between the consequences of mental pressure and depression. And I'm just hoping all these discussions that we're having, that we don't lose sight of that. Just one letter this week. It's not a letter as such, but it's one from a loyal patron, Dell, who often corresponds. Let's quickly do the patrons, the rest of the patrons from this week. Almost forgot. I'm just about to like promote the patron thing, and then I almost forgot to mention them. But we, as well as Mike Thorogood, we got Jack Gadsden. I don't know about Jack Gadsden, but he sounds like a pretty boy, Jack Gadsden, like an actor, like 22 years old. Bit of, you remember Leonardo DiCaprio and Romeo and Juliet? That kind of good looking that blokes don't understand, but women do. Oh, he's just so pretty. Yeah, you like that when you're now, love. Wait till you're 30. You need a solid fucking guy. You need a guy, cauliflower ears, who looks like he can take a punch. But Jack Gadsden there. Phil Davis, very solid name there. Phil Davis. It sounds like he's drives a Vauxhall Vectra. Phil Davis, do you drive a Vauxhall Vectra? That's a Phil Davis. So you feel you're probably named Phil. Between the age of 38 and 55, drives a Vauxhall Vectra. He's got he can tell you his top three favourite motorway service stations like that. He'd go, yeah, M6 Toll Road, Oxford Services, and Weatherby. There you go. This is, you know subjects that will get a reaction from a certain kind of bloke. I've just named three very good services. If you can top that, If you can top that, contact whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. And we've got Mark, so he's a one-namer. He's working somewhere he doesn't feel confident having his name shared. I'm imagining that Mark is like a sound tech for something theatrical or something. Because sound techie, guys, is a great thing about, you know, with TV, everything in front of telly is all, you know, in the production, it's all very liberal and lovely. But a great thing is once you get to a TV studio, cameramen and sound people are just blokes mainly. You know, there are more women doing camera work lately and stuff, but predominantly it's blokes and it is a certain kind of bloke as well. So what happens is you do these jokes that no one on the production really gets, but you know if you get a laugh off a cameraman that there's a chance that Britain might laugh at it. So I think Mark is working a place where maybe he's a bit younger and he doesn't want all the girls to go off of him. And so he's presenting as lefty, but you never know, Mark. Some of these girls, you know, difference, as I'm saying in the stuff earlier about gender, difference is attractive. They might be like, fuck you, Mark, for being a Tory, but it's kind of exciting. You know what I mean? It could be like, well, mention Romeo and Juliet. You could be the fucking Montague, mate. She could be the Capulet. James Bryan here. This might be James O'Brien, but in disguise. James Bryan. That sounds like could be an Irish name there, the way that you spent Bryan. Or not. Brian? James Brian. Maybe James Brian. I don't know. James Brian. No, you sound like you could be like a specific correspondent for The Spectator. Like that you do, you cover. So there's a knocking noise in my house. I think that means my dog is wagging her tail against something. James Brian, I know what you do. You're the food correspondent for The Spectator, but you managed to get politics into your reviews of restaurants. The menu was acceptable, but super woke in some cases. Okay, so let's get back to Dell's letter here. Dell says, we've got Olympic medals in BMXing and trampolines, basically things that 10-year-olds do in the school holidays. We should do well in the Tag with Ryan event. Yeah, BMX. Well, I mean, that's at the younger age of things, Dell. What about the older age? I have thought for ever since Euro 2021 final, public cocaine taking, it does need to come in. We mentioned it a couple of shows previously. But I think that it's almost like now I've seen with the weightlifting that you go up a weight. You could just go up a quarter of a gram each time. And then you just go, okay, here is here's Steve from Sid Cup. He absolutely nailed the quarter of a gram earlier, but now he's taken it up to half a G. He will, and that's gone straight up. Excellent. Look at that. Look at the British team. They know that they have got the chops, but the Colombians, they're still in this. Never count the Colombians out. Right. Okay. Steve is back. He is going for the full gram up the hooter here. Yes, the cardiac teams are on hand. This could go. Oh, look at that. He's got, yeah, he's put it away very quickly. But now, oh dear, Steve's got very paranoid. He's just said he wants to open a restaurant with one of the Colombians, but now he thinks everybody's talking about him. Oh, drugs are a double-sided coin. So, yeah, I think. Another question. Yeah, well, let's get the emails going. There haven't been any recently. What most people think uk@gmail.com. Are there any kind of things that sort of social phenomenons like public cocaine taking or something else that seem like sports that Britain would excel at? Okay, that is the end of this week's podcast. We have the reviews on iTunes. If you leave a 5-star review, I will endeavour to read it out. This one's from Timmers64. So is that your age, Timmers? So see, you're going to be 12 years older than me. That means you're 56. Oh, you must have loved the Al Murray one, right? Great chat of Al Murray. Particularly like the way you corrected his using ambivalent instead of ambiguous without him even noticing. Good attention to detail. Well, I used to be a English teacher. This person thinks that they can leave a 4-star and still have it read out. Jog on. This is from James B20. Really funny and a great antidote to today's work woke comedy world. Yes, I am fixing essentially the reviews with this, but who gives a fuck, all right? Maybe it's like the old LIBOR fixing scandal. Jeff Norcott was trying to manipulate his way to getting decent reviews. And those are the two that we've got recently. So I would say to Juicy Fruit 99, I appreciate your review, but you know, you don't get to leave a 4-star and get read out. And you might question, you know, you think that I'm sensible and yet I still vote for things that you don't understand. Well, you know, this is one of the problems of the left, my friend, is that when something keeps happening, it's not really incumbent on me to explain it. It's incumbent on you to understand, isn't it? I don't understand how the Tories have got another lead for the 123rd consecutive poll. Yeah, that number 123, I'm going to start looking at myself there, you know? So that is the key, and it's always been the key for the left, is instead of not understanding the voters, is understanding, put together a pitch to them that makes sense, and maybe you'll win an election. But listen, thanks for listening. I'll see you next week. Okay.